about you before we get to this flying saucer thing.
All right.
Where are you from, sir?
I'm from the state of California.
Where did you get the title Major?
From the armed services. I was an Army combat intelligence officer during World War II, and I've had approximately 16 years in the military service. Beginning in the year 1939 and until 2 years ago, I am in Washington now as a private citizen, not representing any military services. I am free to speak as an individual, but my views, I'm sure, are not different from many people in the armed services, and it is not contrary to any group or any person in America that supports the Constitution. I'm a VFW member of long standing since 1941, a past commander of my post in California.
You hear Washington to tell the people about flying saucers. You don't mind if I call them flying saucers.
And that's okay.
I understand most of you men don't like the term. You like unidentified flying objects, but that's too long. We'll just say flying saucers. All right, Major, let's get started. Number one, did you ever see such a thing?
Yes, I did. On the night of May the 11th, 1967, in Southern California, I had the unique experience of having a personal sighting on a desert in California. And I think the story is a rather long one. It is very interesting to me, and it changed my whole life as a result of the personal experience that I had on the desert. I dropped all of my work and activities and proceeded to Washington to help create a greater understanding on the flying saucer subject among the people of America, and especially here in Washington, where this knowledge is very important.
All right. You think it's very important. Will you tell me why?
I think it is important because the question of man's conscience is involved. The world is baffled in this day by problems of various kinds, including nuclear fission, the various dangers involved, and resulting from our advance in nuclear science. The confusion in the world from caused by various things, many fields, and it is my understanding from my study and activity in this flying saucer field that here lies an answer that has been so far overlooked by a great many people.
You say overlooked. Major Keyhoe says, or told me, that he thought that the flying saucer issue was buried in official files for reasons which he outlined. Do you feel the same way?
Well, I don't believe there's any major difference between Major Keyhoe's views and mine. We are friends, and I support him in his work every way that I can. However, I wouldn't put the brunt on various military services that are charged with responsibility of a problem of unprecedented proportions.
All right, let me ask the question this way. Do you think that official Washington knows that there is such a thing as flying saucers?
Definitely.
Why don't they tell us? The same question put in a different way.
Well, I believe that the fact that they are allowing people like Major Keyhoe and myself and many others who are researching, talking about, discussing this situation in the field, it's an indication that there is an official recognition.
I'm really surprised to hear you speak that way, Major. You were an officer in the intelligence corps. You're obviously a very intelligent man, and you use the expression, they allow you to speak that way? Do you know of any official act or any official amendment to any constitution in any state or country here in the United States which wouldn't allow you to speak any way you please?
Well, I believe there are ways and means to make people shut up if you don't want them to talk.
I haven't found any. I found them by private people. I found them by private people. If they don't like what you say, they try to find all types of things to do to shut you up. If you're a radio commentator, they might put a squeeze on you financially with sponsors, or they might do all sorts of underhanded things to get you off the air. If you're a newspaper writer, if they can approach the boss of the newspaper, if he's a fellow who has many scruples, he'll fire you. But officialdom would never attempt to do such a thing. And I've never heard of official Washington ever trying to shut anybody up, Major. How could they do it? How could official Washington set you up, or Major Keogh, or anybody who believes in this stuff?
Well, one thing we've been confronted with in open discourse from flying saucers by getting the news out to the public by press, radio, and television, and so forth, is the terrible weapon of ridicule. It has been used a great deal in this field.
But I'm afraid that I've been a little guilty of it myself. I tell you, I saw a man named Truman Bethurum. Do you know Mr. Bethurum?
I know him, yes.
He told me that on the plains of Nevada, he saw a flying saucer. He was invited on board, took a trip in it. And he told me the captain's name was Captain Raines, and I invited her on the microphone. I asked her if she was here. He's sure they got wonderful radios. So I said, come on in, Captain Raines. But she never showed. So I said, I think Mr. Bethurum actually saw what he says he saw, but I thought that if I were with him, I would not have seen it. Now, that may be ridicule, Major. Maybe I've been guilty of it. But ridicule wouldn't stop men who are dedicated to an idea like you.
Correct.
All right, then, let's get going. What did you see when you saw one? Firstly, let me say I don't believe it. Not that I don't believe you saw it. You saw it, because you've got a wonderful imagination. I told that to Major Keogh, too, although he never saw one. I said, I thought people would say they saw him have wonderful imagination. What did you see, Major Keogh?
Well, I'll tell you what I saw, but I'll also tell you that I had witnesses to my sighting.
All right.
That's one of those fortunate things that happen sometimes when the person makes a certain statement that they saw something. They are sometimes very fortunate to have a witness. I know that many people who think they have seen these objects at various times have not been fortunate enough to know of a witness who would appear and support them. My sighting was witnessed by some people in California. I have a name and address, and anyone that is curious enough or wants to check on it, they have my permission to write to them. I will supply this address to anyone that wants to write.
Have you ever seen a picture of one?
Yes, I have. I've seen a number of pictures.
Actual photographs. Why have they never been published?
Well,
I think if you brought in a picture, the Washington Post tonight, of an actual flying saucer, they put it on the border star of the news, they put it on the front page.
The pictures have been published. Photographs have appeared in some of our leading magazines, and I personally saw a paper from Pennsylvania published about 2 months ago, which had not only one, but about four pictures of flying saucers in the paper.
Well, I saw a picture, too, but they didn't look like flying saucers to me. They looked like shooting sunspots or stars or what have you. They didn't look at all like what I think a flying saucer should look like. What did you see, Major?
My sighting was at night. Many of the sightings that have taken place were in the daytime when a definite metallic object, usually of a stainless steel type and color or appearance or aluminum, have been observed. But mine was in the nighttime at about 11:30 p.m. I was walking in the desert in California close to the site of a space convention that was being conducted and was underway at Giant Rock, California, Yucca Valley. And I had the a very unique and strange experience. I could talk about this to people with great understanding on this subject, and even to them, many of the scientists that were involved in this sighting and experience would cause a great deal of thought and conjecture. And I am going to limit my discourse to the things that I believe will be of definite benefit and understanding to the people that are listening this evening. The sighting occurred, as I said, at about 11:30 p.m. I was walking in the desert. I saw a star up in the sky. Here I felt that there was probably some kind of telepathic guidance or something involved. because of the science that I looked at a certain star out of all the stars in the sky. The minute that my eye caught this star, it blinked an orange light. When I saw the orange light, I thought, well, here's a strange star that changes color when you look at it. As I continued to watch it, it changed from a star into a large white light, egg-shaped, and it moved across the sky in a gliding motion, moving toward me. I estimate that it was probably 15 or 20 miles away from me at the first point of observation, and it took perhaps 30 seconds or so for this white object to arrive at a point in front of me about a quarter of a mile away, about 1,000 to 1,500 feet in elevation above the desert. When the object arrived at this point, it stopped. It ceased all forward motion, became motionless, and it changed into a large red sphere about the color of the taillight on an automobile. It was at this point I estimated to be about 25 to 30 feet in diameter. It remained motionless in this one spot for approximately 5 minutes. At this point, it was observed by the witnesses that I mentioned earlier, and they reported the same to me the following morning. I had never met the people before. I didn't meet them until the following morning. And they gave me their names and addresses as I had breakfast with them. After remaining motionless for about 5 minutes, this red object started descending to the desert in a direction away from me. The minute it began motion again, it descended, it changed back to a white light, again egg-shaped, and it glided down toward the desert and landed approximately 2 miles away from me, went kind of over a ridge, and it went out of sight. And at this point, I was walking toward this object all the time. And for all of the people listening tonight, anyone from any listening in the government capacity or the capacity of any foreign government, I would like to state now and definitely that I had no fear about this object or any of the consequences of my going out into this desert area by myself. I know that certain people and certain groups have tried to inject a fear situation into this study because of the fact that this is, you might say, somewhat unknown. This is unprecedented and it is unknown.
Did you ever reach the object?
I walked out into the desert. I was out in the desert all night until the following morning. I arrived back at the first point of observation at about 7 o'clock the following morning. I observed this object two more times during the night at very close proximity. And I came to learn many things that I had already thought before. And that is that these extraterrestrial crafts or interplanetary crafts do have the ability to operate in other dimensions. If we get into dimensional discussions, why we get into a lot of complicated things that I don't think most people would understand.
All right, well, maybe let me interject this question right here. You say, if I got you straight, that you saw this object, it landed, you started to walk to it, and then you went home, or to the hotel or whatever it is, and then you came back to the point of observation and you saw it again.
No, I remained on the desert all night long.
And you saw it twice again.
I saw it twice again in close proximity. And whenever it was in motion, it was luminous white light. And I believe from books that I have read, observations of other people that are taken at close quarters, that on certain occasions, these ships become visible to the physical eye, but only under the right conditions and for certain reasons.
It seems to me a shame that you didn't have a camera slung over your shoulder.
I had a camera slung over my shoulder, and I did not once think of taking a picture.
Finally, The revelation that came to you after so many years of believing in something and not seeing it, finally, there it was, twice, three times, and you didn't take this camera off and take a picture.
I did not.
It's too bad, isn't it?
It is too bad. I thought about it many times afterwards, and I had told friends that all the stupid things that here I was close to it, I saw it, and the camera was on my shoulder, and I didn't take a picture.
Did you have it to rewind?
The reason was because there were a great many other things on my mind. I have mentioned in letters to certain individuals that this was a nice, great experience for me. There were a lot of things happened to that on that desert that I will tell various people when I know that they have arrived at a point of where they will understand some of these things and not treat it as science fiction. I think that it is useless to talk to a group of people unless they listen in an open-minded attitude and already know something about this, because this gets off into realms of philosophy and many things that right without any previous acquaintance why people would tend to say, well, we're getting into science fiction now.
All right. Let me just ask you a few surface questions. For instance, did you see any life on the ship?
I saw no sign of life in the third dimension that we operate in. However, I had reason to believe from certain observations that I made that there were was a great deal of activity going on the desert in, you might say, interdimensional or other dimensions. And I had certain things were shown to me. I heard sounds, and I saw things with my eyes, which confirmed these ideas.
Did you report your findings to any government agency?
Yes, I have. I have reported this sighting to friends here in the Washington area, and any military group or intelligence group that wants to know any further information about it, I will give all the information I have on this sighting and desert experience that I had.
Now, Major Aoi is an Army officer. You know, as well as I do, that airplanes have cameras on them now. Most of the airplanes have cameras on them. You, I'm quite sure, in your brochures, have the names of pilots and flyboys who have seen these flying saucers, right?
Yes, I have.
Why do you think it is that they are astronomers who are searching the skies 24 hours a day for any phenomena that might occur with cameras? Why do you think it is that they haven't got pictures of these things?
Well, my personal opinion is that they have the pictures.
Why don't they expose them?
Well, that's a question I couldn't answer. It's not in my capacity to answer that question.
What is your idea? Do you have any opinion on the subject?
Yes, I have very definite ideas and opinions on the subject. I think that the main reason for this is that the whole question is so big, it is so of such fantastic proportions, and could have so great an effect on our general concept of the universe, and what life is all about, and our relationship to other planets and life in the universe, that various people have so far decided that perhaps the American public was not ready to hear this whole truth.
All right, let us presume for a moment that I go along with it. I'm not sure that I do, but let us presume for a moment that I do, that the American public is not ready for such a truth. Even though the American public is let known through its newspapers and radio and television about such major happenings as the disarmament talk in London with Stassen and the Russian people in the Ally, even though we're told about almost everything that happens, AKO says in this particular case, it is of such major proportion that the government has decided the American people aren't ready to hear. Let us presume for a moment that I agree with this. Would you say, Michael, that these sightings have been made by other countries?
Definitely. I have I received mail, and I read and seen publications where these sightings are reported in a great many countries all over the world.
All right. Do you think the same thing that holds true of American government holds true of all other governments? That that you say their people aren't supposed to know about this thing? Or would you say that all the governments got together through some agency and said, let's keep it away?
Well, some governments have made these sightings and the recent reports not necessarily official, but they have. There seems to be no blockage of information flowing to the public. Mexico is such a country, and Australia has been treating it with a very open attitude, and New Zealand, and perhaps some other countries.
Well, as I've said before, I don't believe that we have such a thing as censorship in our country, and I don't think that the government or even the President of the United States could say to the newspaper publishers, and have an association, please don't pick anything up from the Australian or Mexican papers and print it to our country. I don't think that our newspaper publishers would go for it, number one, and I don't think President Eisenhower would ever tell them, number two. So I don't understand why the AC or the UP or any newspaper who has a correspondent in Mexico or Australia, and I guess most of our major newspapers have one there, why they haven't printed this. I'm just trying to figure out why. See, I'm not disputing your word, Major Hale. You say you saw it, you saw it. You're here on the microphone, you're my guest, and I agree that you saw it.
Yeah.
You tell me they saw it in Mexico, you tell me they saw it in official Washington, you tell me they saw it in Australia. I'm just wondering why these things are not printed. I don't think anybody's going to censor the American press. They better not try.
No, I think a lot of this. I mean, there are a lot of factors involved in this. I don't think that the American press can be censored either. But there are certain times and places and ways and means by which the American press could be convinced that they should cooperate in certain ways and not let this information out at the present time or not too fast. We have an indication here of something that happened just immediately. We have a man out here in the audience this evening who had a sighting just right before last. This was reported to a great many newspapers and police stations all over the area, and we have the situation right here in Washington where this report occurred only in one paper and in a very small and insignificant manner. The whole story was not presented right here in Washington. It occurred this night before last. Do you know why? A personal report to a newspaper submitted all the information that I had, gave the names of the parties involved and everything, and nothing was reported.
Why do you think it is that newspapers didn't report it, Major?
Well, I couldn't answer that question.
I could venture a guess. I wonder if you'd agree with me. Several years ago, the newspapers were reporting every sighting. And then it came to a point where they even reported a sighting by a man who saw little green men with horns jump out of the chin. So I guess newspapers got together and said, unless it comes from something official, unless it comes from a recognized astronomer or some scientific mind, we just aren't going to report them. You know something? I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Would you think that might be the reason?
I think it might be. I think also that there are some of our newspaper people and what, others are aware of this situation. In 1939, when we had the Mars scare and invasion from Mars and all this and that, and Orson Welles has been blamed for this so many times.
Everybody says we can't do it because Orson Welles did it and look what happened. Well, you're an open microphone now and you might have government officials listening to you. We're going to ask the gentleman of whom you speak to come up on the air and tell us about his sighting.
Yes, I'd like to have him do that.
All right. You hold on, though, for 5 minutes of waiting news with Paul Mills. We'll be right back.